All right, Dieter and Jake, live week 7, 49ers and Falcons coming up. And Jake, diving into the film on Atlanta, coming off of a huge win against Buffalo where they made Josh Allen look like a mortal and that offensive line look kind of bad. I think there's like two wildly different directions, like wildly different interpretations that you could come with these last couple games of tape. Like where do you stand with the Atlanta Falcons right now?
Yeah, they're mercurial, if you will.
Hey now.
It's funny because it's like a team where you're like, there's a world where this is like the best team in football. And I don't even think it's that outrageous to sort of project that as a possibility. I'm not saying that's what they're going to be or that's what they are. No. But the upside on both sides of the ball is pretty monumental. I think the obvious takeaway watching that game is just, when that offense is humming, you're kind of screwed. Like, they've got weapons. Bijan is, and it's funny because I think we were going through the Niners tape, and, you know, I think part of the tough evaluation of that is like, is McCaffrey lost a step? Is it the line? Is it both? And you watch some of these runs, and I think the Falcons' offensive line is blocking pretty well for Bijan. They're blocking much better than the Niners' line. But there are some plays where it's like, he has an inch of space and he's just so damn fast and seen it so well that he's gone.
Yeah.
And it's 80 yards to the house and you go, I don't even think we played it that badly.
No, so, no, there were a couple plays like that. There were a couple plays like that in the Buffalo game where you're just like, And that is the difference between a hyper elite running back and just a really good one, which is what Christian McCaffrey still is, but is not that hyper elite guy. And it's something that I know the Niners talked a lot about around draft time, with the ability to kind of squeeze through tight holes. Bijan, with his size, he's a big boy. I know he's not as big as Tyler Algier. Here's how good Bijan is. He makes Tyler Algier look kind of like average. Tyler Algier might be one of the top 20 running backs in the league. He's really good.
He's at minimum a top 5 bowling ball in the league.
He's incredible. He just runs at the same pace. I doubt this was of your time. Katamari Damache, the video game, a stoner favorite. Katamari Damache was this like Japanese video game. It stuck in my head because it has so many applicable. Where basically you're just like a dude and you have to roll a ball and you just pick stuff up around a room that makes the ball bigger, and you just are just pushing the ball. The inverse of a rolling stone gathers no moss. That is kind of what watching Tyler Algier, a very good running back, is like. He just picks up bodies and he just keeps going. He's an inverse Scataboo.
Scataboo's
running through you. He's just saying like, come on along for the ride. Let's do this.
Yeah. It's like, I feel like Brian Robinson is like, well, he's either Algier or he's a Scataboo, but he's actually neither. Like he's like the power back who's doing neither thing, where you're just like, come on, do one of the things.
But back to Bijan, which is the initial point. I mean, this is a unique, inarguably, I think it's inarguable, he's the best running back in football right now.
Yeah, he's a, to put it in Nick Saban terms, he's a problem.
Is that Nick Saban's term now?
Well, he's a problem when I just remember that Nick Saban, when they had the Giants like preseason thing, and Brian Daboll's like, so what? Who were the guys you looked at? And he's like, there were three guys that were a problem. It was like Brock Bowers. Mm-hmm. It was the guy that the Giants drafted who tore his ACL. I'm forgetting his entire name.
That year?
Yeah. Malik Nabers.
Yeah.
And maybe it was Marvin Harrison or someone. But it was
Marvin Harrison certainly is a problem. I'm not sure it classified as that. And people will say, I know that we're going to try to leave it, but like him or Jonathan Taylor right now, Jonathan Taylor's doing wonderful things. The Colts offensive line, I think, is doing a lot of that. They've been really, really excellent, and Shane Steichen is scheming it. What stood out to me watching Atlanta is that Zach Robinson doesn't really feel like he's scheming it up. When I watch them, it doesn't come across to me like a Kyle when he's really clicking, or even like a Liam Cohen. It's a lot better than it was last year, where they were obviously passing, so obviously running. It still feels a little predictable, but when you have a Drake London in the pass game, a Kyle Pitts in the pass game, Penix, who can just get it into any window, and then Bijan Robinson and Algier, it kind of doesn't matter if you're predictable.
Yeah, I would say they're a little bit better than that, but it is it's interesting watching them because they've been running a lot of like pistol, and maybe it's because it's tough to evaluate because maybe it's just because Michael Penix is a lefty, but there's parts of it that feel very Dolphins-y.
I get that.
Pre-snap motion, like a little spinner action, they're getting the ball out real quick, like sixth fastest. I think it's 2.68 seconds. Mm-hmm. Maybe fifth fastest in the league delivering the ball. And he's given some quick options, especially early in the game. I think it changes, and they went for the kill shot as it evolved. But totally. Early in the game, they're like, here's a check down. Here's like a little, we're going to have Drake London just sit at 8 yards and give you that option.
Well, in the game against Buffalo, I'm glad you brought it up. I mean, they did start just bombs away in the second half of that game. And I think it's because they said, okay, the basics are there. The stuff that we want to do is there. Now let's go make these terrible safeties' lives living hell.
Yeah.
Like, and I'm not sure that's not something you can do to the San Francisco 49ers right now. I should note that the only wide receiver who caught a pass against Buffalo was Drake London. Yeah. And they're running. So there's that.
I don't know if Darnell Mooney's healthy. I know he wasn't last week. So
no. And I think he was close last week. So this might be the breakthrough. But they are a team that can put 40 on the board if it's cooking. It's also a team that really feels like it could throw a crowbar into its own bicycle spokes and just flip over the top.
Right.
If you take away Bijan, there is enough volatility, maybe even just risk in the way that Penix throws. And I'm a big Penix guy.
Yeah.
Big Penix energy over here. But he really wants to throw it into tight windows, and he's not getting to a second or a third read. And I feel like my big takeaway was, oh, this could be a total fucking disaster for the 49ers defense.
Yeah.
But also, Robert Saleh can outsmart this.
I had the same, you know what? You know, the exact thought I had is I really do believe this is the first game they get a pick.
In the notes. Unbelievable.
Oh, wait, one sec. I got a nightmare situation.
What's Tucker doing? Okay, Tucker's there. So it's the exact same. Luckily, Jake's doing the same thing I'm saying. Hopefully, Tucker isn't taking a giant deuce on the rug, which is, again, a real possibility that the Niners defense can do because Atlanta runs a lot of dig routes, and it's mostly with London. And we saw what happened when Fred Warner was out against Tampa. That was not just easy money. That was huge direct deposits, you know, like 2 weeks worth of pay every time, to the point where you now have, you know, both of the Johnsons from Tampa Bay being like highly sought after fantasy football options this week because people think that that's just how it's going to be in perpetuity with Ibuka out. It's not really. That dig route is something that they're going to have to find a way to take away, and I'm not sure how you do that with a linebacker like Tatum Bethune, who I like Tatum Bethune coming in and filling the run. And I think D Winters can do pretty well when we're talking about the hook or certainly the flat. And then certainly with filling the run, I think you like both of who the hell knows who's playing safety next to Mustafa, but like both of those guys are really good at stopping the run. But if they can, and this is something that Atlanta has really struggled with, if Atlanta can use play action to actually pull linebackers, and it's something they're doing better at, but they're still not good at it yet. If they can pull linebackers, that is acres of space for Drake London and I think Kyle Pitts to just catch and run to their heart's content. If you add Mooney into it, that's a big issue.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I like usually we come in with some sort of like, here's how you should handle this thing. I don't know what the Niners do on defense. I know that there are opportunities. I'm not smart enough to figure out how you can stop the run, which requires an 11-man effort against Bijan Robinson, this offensive line, and even Algier, and with Charlie Warner, who we'll talk about in a second, playing a quasi-fullback. I don't know how you stop that run with the commitment that's necessary to do that while not leaving yourself susceptible to those dig routes over the middle.
I'm with you. Apologies. I forgot. I'm house sitting and my mom's dog is getting picked up by a dog sitter. So my dog lost his absolute mind. Pretty fair. pretty fair.
The only suggestion that I have on that front, Jake, and apologies for your moment of crisis, but the only suggestion, this is the longest I've talked, I've never felt so free, that they can maybe just concede stuff outside the numbers and just say, like, everything, like, it's college hashes, right, which are way too wide, disgustingly wide. Anything
like
inside
force Penix to throw outside the numbers into tight windows.
And he can do it. I don't even think it would be tight windows. I think it'd be one-on-one coverage on the outside and just a globule of man, like nine guys across the middle. I don't know what's going on today. Maybe it's the fact that, you know, the sun is not shining in the dungeon and I can actually think without this bright light. But by the way, it's just chaos behind me. For anyone who's concerned, it rained. I used to have an office, then I had another office, and then my wife pulled rank multiple times, then her mom pulled rank. So now I'm in the basement, which is an unattached room, which requires me to go through a hobbit door. I have a 100-foot Ethernet cable coming out a window. It's actually pretty nice. No one can get me down here.
Nice.
It also has no natural light outside of like one window, which doesn't really get natural light. And whenever it rains, I have to take all the stuff that my toddler and baby play with outside and bring it in. So I'm just surrounded by tricycles and bike seats and strollers. And back to the globule of men, nine guys in the middle and just dare Michael Penix to throw the outside. He's got the arm talent to do it, but there's not a lot of tape that shows that he wants to.
Agreed. And I think what I was thinking is the 49ers have been running like decent amount of cover six, cover seven. I think there's going to be an opportunity where for Renardo, where he's in that, like the one side where it's cover three and he's supposed to sit low, where he sinks a little bit deeper than like a linebacker typically does.
Right.
And if he sits on that, I think he's going to have a chance to sort of like sneaky, not actually what his job is calling him to do, but sort of sneak back a little bit. Because Penix is going to try and rip it on some of those hole shots, and they are tight windows, and they were tight windows against Buffalo.
Right.
And he almost got picked off, and he doesn't throw with elite anticipation.
No, it's a little Trevor Lawrence-y.
Yeah, I think it's not that I think he sees it poorly. It's that it comes out a little bit late and he gets some big windows to throw into. I don't think he's bad.
That was a knock on him coming out of the draft, right? Like long arm motion and really trust that he can get the 95 mile per hour fastball in there. And he is, but I think it's so difficult to do. But if you can try to turn them into a one dimensional offense, he'll give you something, but they don't have him throw enough to really force that. So Zach Robinson is their offensive coordinator. I think you and I have talked about Zach Robinson before on the channel and kind of the simplistic nature of what it is they do. They're getting a little funkier.
He's from LA, right?
He came from the Sean McVay system. He's going to be the next head coach at Oklahoma State. Another thing, they Steve Wilkes'd him and pulled him down from the booth. So now he's on the sidelines. They're crediting that for sort of this offensive explosion as of late. I can't say that that's not true because they have looked a lot better over the last 3 weeks. Again, I'm starting to see a little bit more of this play action because I want to be clear about this. They have, even in their limited state currently, they still have the personnel. I mean, Drake London's a elite strong, but very, very good wide receiver. They have an elite player in Robinson. Pitts is an outstanding pass-catching tight end. I mean, effectively just a massive slot. And then Algier's a dude, and that offensive line is giving them protection, though I do believe Jake Matthews is, I don't know what his deal is for this game, and that's an issue. But they have, in that offense, the ability to be one of the best in the NFL. They have not actualized that yet. It does feel like they're on a trajectory, and perhaps this is the week where it just kind of goes to the moon. And as we all know, if you do that in an island game, and this is Sunday Night Football, that's the truth. There's no other evidence that can be presented against an island game.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think, I think it's going to be tough for the Niners to try and like get all this together and deal with what the Falcons are presenting them with Bethune. And I think he just has some innate limitations physically in coverage and is a little bit stiff. But I am with you. I do think if you put a priority on taking away the middle of the field, and the tough thing is like Bijan's going to get outside and he's going to make you pay sort of regardless of what you do. And I think there's going to be a lot on the safeties to clean that up. And I do really wonder what Salah's approach is, like who he trusts. And he used that term, the eraser. Like, who does he actually trust to like really clean stuff up? Because I did, you know, when I did the grades yesterday, I did Mustafa. Yeah. On that touchdown, Mustafa took a bad angle. He shuffled, and he was part of the reason that I think it was Sean Tucker walked in untouched.
On that counter, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's there's a little bit of that where you're like, do you want to trust Mustafa in a full role? I kind of think you do, regardless, just because of the speed. And if you're going to trust anyone to play with violence and speed and just one or zero against Bijan, you do, while knowing he's going to come up whiffing at times.
Right. Yeah.
So I don't know. Salah's approach to this game is going to be really interesting because you can probably convince yourself you need to either be hyper aggressive or play it hyper safe.
It has to be hyper though. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't think you can be in between on any of it.
I'll also note this. I mean, this offensive line is, this is why it's so frustrating that it doesn't feel like they do a good job of merging the pass game and the run game, which is theoretically the staple of this offense that stems from Kubiak and Shanahan and McVay, is because their offensive line is giving you the same look on every play. They move people horizontally. Now, it's also kind of a bit that they do the same thing every play because they don't run any gap stuff, but like they move people horizontally. They move horizontally. And it's so easy to just, and they did it once or twice where they just roll out. Penix has it, and that's the classic, you know, boot throw to the drag route. And it's like, that's there all day if they want it. And they run it like once or twice a game. And it's, again, not to say that they don't have, Penix doesn't have the ability. I think he's actually how do I put this?
I just got extreme deja vu for some reason. I feel like we've talked about this in drag routes, and maybe we're talking about
this is a 49ers offense. It's everybody's fucking offense. Like they all do it. And that's why it's frustrating, because you can see the potential of this Atlanta offense, you know, and what it could be if they had, I don't know. It feels like there's and maybe this is where we've talked about it with Green Bay. It feels like there's a breakdown in trust somewhere. And, you know, when we watch Green Bay, it's like, they do not like Jordan Love. Like, I know they gave him the money, but like, LaFleur does not like
my begrudging pick for MVP.
He still might get there, but
I know. And I did pick Egbuka for rookie of the year. Anyway, continue.
Regardless, I think that Atlanta has every opportunity to put 40 on the board in this game. I think that Robert Saleh is going to have to try a bunch of stuff, maybe more than he's ever tried before, or tried the least amount of stuff, but to your point, extremes. And I think he's going to have to just coach the bejesus out of this game to keep him. But like, the only thing that really stops Atlanta from putting 40 on the board is the Atlanta Falcons, and they could very well do that. They could absolutely fuck themselves over.
It's almost setting up where like the 49ers, I know they want the ball in the second half, but like, I feel like this season it's better for them to get the ball first and put the game into like a grinding pulp where they're not running the ball effectively, but that also means that it's going to take more plays for them to get a first down and they can control time of possession, which is not to say running the ball poorly is a good thing, but the benefit of it is if you do move the chains, each possession takes longer and it keeps offenses off the field. Those offenses get antsy, and an offense like this, which likes to take shots, could be susceptible to turnovers.
And this is the Niners spiel. Like, actually, we're not running the ball poorly because we run the most plays in the NFL. So how could we be running it poorly? It's like, because I watch you and it's awful to watch. And you're throwing it 50 times a game with Mac Jones. So I don't know.
Are they going to have a good running game ever this season?
The Niners?
Well, yeah.
If there was ever a week, this is it. With Kittle being back, in theory. Though I will say it might be Pooney out, I think. We've been asking for one of the guards to go just to save them from themselves, not on a personal level. I think both of those guys are just fine, and I like their potential long term. But Pooney didn't practice on Wednesday, and we'll keep an eye on that.
That's interesting.
He wasn't on the injury report for a couple of weeks, and now they're like, can't do it. Yeah, now it's like, of course he's injured.
It's like, it was like Bowers. They're like, yeah, he's gonna play, and they're like, oh, his knee's shot, so we're just gonna.
Well. And it's not ideal having the bad PCL. Let's not forget, let's flip it over to the Niners offense here. So well, like Pierce,
should we get to our thing that our segment before we switch it over?
That's a great call, Jake. Good job. Okay. So Bijan, we're watching the Bijan tape and we're like, this dude's sick. This is awesome to watch because he's making a lot out of a little sometimes. And whenever you give him something, it's like, it's done. He's playing on rookie mode in Madden a lot of times, which got Jake's mind going in the ways that we like to see Jake's mind going.
Yeah. Dieter's like, all right. He's excited about it. We'll do the bit.
Now we're good, which is who are the sickest running backs we've seen in our lifetimes?
Sickest, not the best. To be clear, this is not some overlap there, but these are just like the sickest players we've watched. There will be some homerism here.
There's absolute homerism.
This
on
is based
my
on
end.
who we grew up watching, who we've seen in our lifetime, which explains why there's a lot of players not on my list and some on Dieter's.
That's exactly what we could tell who the older of us is. And there is video evidence of me watching Bo Jackson, but I have no actual recollection of that, so he's not on the list. Barry Sanders, number one, without question. Yeah. Barry Sanders was sick. Kid growing up in Chicago, got to watch him twice a year at the minimum. Like Barry Sanders, there's never been anything like him. There will never be anything like him. There was no scheme. It was give Barry the ball, let Barry make 14 guys miss. Barry Sanders, one of one. Still remember where I was when he retired. Like Barry, I had a Barry Sanders jersey. Barry Sanders kicked ass. Barry Sanders, number one. You all eight of your guys, all seven of the rest of my guys, can't hold a candle to Barry.
Oh, no question. If I'd seen Barry Sanders for a second growing up, he'd be on there. Obviously I have to start with Adrian Peterson, who's just Adrian Peterson. I just remember him just rushing for like 200 yards a game for the Vikings every single week. So I don't feel like I need to explain that.
No, I'm with you. Now I went with Marshall Faulk. I mean, I was, I caught the very tail. I was more of a, and I'm glad that you had him on your list. I didn't want to do any crossover. We had a lot of crossover because obviously,
be clear. I very, very, very strongly consider Jamal Charles and Priest Holmes and Chris Johnson, who is basically on my list. But, you know,
Chris Johnson's unbelievable. Marshall Faulk, though, just the all around ability, just as good as it gets. LaDainian Tomlinson, same thing, just as good as it gets. I went with Jamal Charles. Now, listen, y'all got to remember, I grew up a Chiefs fan.
Yeah.
And the Chiefs had nothing. They had nothing, but they had Jamal Charles. They had Priest Holmes. They had Larry Johnson. So I had Sunday ticket as a 9-year-old because I wanted to watch the Chiefs. We got a satellite dish and everything. That was my birthday present for like every year for the 6 years straight. Dad got me Sunday ticket. Jamal Charles was the truth. He was absolutely awesome. Y'all can throw whatever. This is my personal list. Y'all can do whatever. You have your own personal list.
Right.
Jamal Charles, Priest Holmes, Larry Johnson. Like when you watch a 7-9 football team where everything revolves around the running back, it's awesome when those running backs kick ass.
That's where I was at. I almost had Curtis Martin on this list because Martin with the Jets, he was so close to making it. But instead I went, you know, like Saquon Barkley, who, especially with the Giants, where you're just like, oh my God, you're like, he almost was worth the pick. He wasn't that where they drafted him, but he was almost worth it. And you just watch like, oh, he got behind an offensive line that could block for him last year and just wins a Super Bowl.
It's unbelievable.
Funny how that works. Bijan.
Sorry, covering you up. How old do you think I am, Tony? Walter, I was born in 88. Walter Payton was done by then.
The number one I got a shout out here is Tiki Barber.
I was surprised by this one. Tiki Barber would not have made my list.
You rewatched Tiki Barber? He was like a crazy scat back. Like he was shifty as all hell. He'd make runs where he's like cutting back across the entire field. He was awesome. Terrible guy. Like kind of the worst.
Listen, we can't do the terrible guy thing. I have Larry Johnson on my list. But I remember about Tiki Barber is that he was like whispering sweet nothings to the football.
Awesome to watch for like a lot of hopeless Giants teams where he was like, I think pretty clearly like their best running back.
Oh yeah,
in franchise history. Like he was sick as all hell.
Sorry. It's on the top of the thing. Also, I'm surprised that this didn't come up in our back and forth. Darren Sproles. I remember Darren Sproles. You know, I grew up a Chiefs fan. My parents didn't really give a shit, but like, you know, I had a lot of family in Kansas City. I had a lot of I had a lot of family that went to KU, which is a detriment on them, and they won't get any money when I die. But some folks that went to K-State. So we watched a lot of K-State football growing up on Fox Sports Network, which is where the Big 12 was at the time. That's how I fell in love with Missouri and Brad Smith and all that. But Darren Sproles, I remember vividly Darren Sproles' Big 12 championship game. I think it was, 2001? Might have been. I don't know. It was at Arrowhead. And Darren Sproles was unbelievable there, and he just remained unbelievable the entire time. Talk about a sick running back. This dude should have died countless times, and yet you couldn't touch him. You couldn't touch him. He wasn't just small and shifty. He would deliver blows as a little guy. He was awesome.
Yeah. I think part of my brain, a little bit of it, occupy like Sproles and Reggie Bush occupy a little bit of the same space. Yeah. In my brain.
Reggie Bush is a great option, but if we had collegiate, we'd have a whole different conversation.
I know.
Never translated.
It never did. I got to go with Steven Jackson.
Love
God
it.
Almighty.
Steven Jackson was awesome.
The violence, and also I didn't even mention Marshawn, which obviously.
We know Marshawn. That goes
We know Marshawn. But Steven Jackson, one of the, like, I think he's appreciated, but I think he's underappreciated playing on some really, truly garbage teams.
Dude.
Fighting for his life. Like, cutting incredibly well while also being violent and so powerful, just awesome.
Another guy who, by the way, like, never changed speeds. It was just a steady rate of kill. It was awesome. I covered the St. Louis Rams on occasion when I was at Mizzou, and we would go to games, and that's when I first got to be on an NFL sideline. They would let me do sideline stuff for the Rams because that stadium was so garbage. If you just ask, and I hear it in my mind still, the noise that Steven Jackson once made running over an Atlanta Falcons safety who I don't think made it, honestly. he hit him. He was one-on-one in the open field coming down the left sideline. I'm standing back right corner, bottom left if you're viewing from overhead, and they're coming right at me, and I'm like, oh, this is my first time on the sideline. I'm like, I'm going to die. And Steven Jackson just ran this dude over, and the sound that it made haunts me to this day. Steven Jackson, all-time dude. The only other player, I should note, who has made, I've been on the sidelines a bit, haven't been on in a while when game is on. The only other player who made that kind of sound, Christian McCaffrey at Stanford, Pac-12 championship game against USC.
Wow.
Clay Helton's USC. And that noise came through on him delivering a hit. And you go, well, it's college. But I'm like, if he can deliver that kind of Steven Jackson force, there might be a future for him in this league. But not on the sick list, I should note.
Yeah. And then listen, I considered, Benali points out, like Derrick Henry. I considered Derrick Henry. But it's like so, I don't know, he's so obvious. And there's like, when you're that large, it takes a little bit away where, like, I mean, Adrian Peterson was huge. But I don't know.
When you watch Adrian Peterson, it didn't look right. He was so big, but so smooth and fast. It was like a perfect sprinter. It was a beautiful thing. Yeah, Shady McCoy on your list. Yeah.
Shady McCoy, almost. I mean, you could make an argument just for the snow games, because I don't think there's ever been a better runner in the snow, but he's just like, he was shifty as all hell. And again, him and DeMarco Murray, like prime DeMarco Murray, there's like a little bit of a mind meld there in my head. I wanted to put Chris Johnson on the list, but we settled for Shady McCoy.
Yeah.
And again, it's a little too modern for my taste. I wanted to go Jamal Lewis, from the Ravens.
Was Jamal Lewis sick though? Or did
no,
he just get
that's
a lot
why
of
I pulled him off. He was awesome. But he wasn't like sick, right? No. And so that was a limiting factor for me. I considered like even Arian Foster, a little bit Sean Alexander, but Sean, you know, but like they didn't quite do it. Shady McCoy was like a sick back. He was like a guy who was probably cooler than he was actually like a elite back. And so that's why he made it.
I had to throw in Todd Gurley. I think that the Todd Gurley erasure. I like, you know, listen, I know that when we talk Hall of Fame and stuff, it's about longevity. I think that's kind of BS. If I have to, you know, play it by the laws of the land, like, I get it. You have to do it over an extended period of time. But what I like is like 3-year hyper elite peaks.
Right.
And like, by the way, Christian McCaffrey deserves to be on this list, but like he isn't. Todd Gurley, for those 3 years, when we're talking about an outside zone back who could do it all, man, it's hard to imagine a more perfect specimen for that role than Todd Gurley.
Who else did you consider? Because I want to throw a couple more names at you before we move on.
I'll give you a name. I'll give you a name that you would have never thought of. Matt Forte for the Bears.
Oh,
Jets. Yeah, he played for the Jets too. Matt Forte was a sick player in that, like, he just won. He got, you know what?
Yeah.
I was talking to somebody about this the other day, like, and I firmly believe this. I don't think I bring it up very often because it's going to out me as a total dork, as if that was not in the question. But I really think that we undervalue first downs as like a stat, to the point where, like, in my fantasy football league that I run with my college dipshit buddies, like, we have first downs as like the main stat. Like, move the chains, first downs. Like, can you get that first down? Matt Forte was just a first down machine. And that was sick. That was absolutely sick.
Yeah, I'm with you. Again, folks, these are all players that we've seen. This is in our lifetime. So anyone you haven't seen.
Also, none of this is scientific.
Yeah, it's our list. It's a vibes-based economy.
It's an elaborate way to remember some guys.
Yeah, I'll do some honorable mentions that were not on either of our lists.
Nice.
Clinton Portis. Really
good option.
Really strongly considered Clinton Portis. I mentioned Curtis Martin. Mm-hmm. I mentioned Jamal Lewis, mm-hmm. Sean Alexander. Really, you know, an almost borderline funny one I thought about, and I was like, it doesn't quite fit the criteria, but like Jerome Bettis, like kind of sick.
I thought about the bus too. The bus was sick.
And the bus was sick.
If you didn't have to watch it every week, then
yeah,
I'm sure it was a lot cooler. I mean, Brian, you don't think that I would put LaDainian Tomlinson on my list? You might notice how there's no crossover, buddy. Get it together, Brian. You know,
who else? Yeah.
Charlie Gardner was pretty sick.
I almost threw Ricky Williams on there.
Ricky Williams, good option. Never felt that.
Yeah, didn't sustain it. There's like 1 year, and it was
vividly
kinda...
remember Texas Ricky Williams. Late stage Dolphins, Ricky Williams.
A reminder, Priest Holmes was behind Ricky Williams on that depth chart, but actually helped Texas more than Ricky Williams did in a key. Was it the national championship, key game, bowl game, something like that?
Ooh, that's a good question. I don't remember that well. It was still the 90s.
I watched a mini doc on it before this.
Okay, good. Because I'm like, geez, you busted up Big 12 post SWAC knowledge on me. I'm done. Yeah, I think a lot of people would be like, what about Frank Gore? Frank Gore, I don't think ever had the peak.
He's a perfect back not to be on this list, right?
Frank Gore's just like a steady Eddie, baby.
Exactly. Just a great, steady power back.
This is a good one from Alberto. Sorry.
Yeah, Edgerrin James.
Very much considered Edgerrin James on the list.
It was tough because you're trying to think of like who... They needed to be good enough for long enough, but not necessarily their whole career. Like Chris Johnson, you know, like his peak is like a perfect example.
It was 1 year.
Right.
So when you think about Edgerrin James, it's like, wasn't Marshall Faulk sicker though? Like,
right.
Kind of the same thing. So
yeah,
that is what it is. That's the sick list. We're just going to rank stuff every week because this is what
it's
we talk about. And
it's
we're
fun. It gets
fun.
People, it's provocative. It gets people going.
Yeah, we'll see. It seems like it got some people going in the chat, and it looks like it got some people going from our live view count, not in a good direction. So let's go back to just being depraved, sick film junkies.
Yeah, what are we moving on to the defense here?
Well, we've always moved on to the D. Yeah. So Atlanta's defense is dynamic. Is that a nice way of putting it? Aggressive. Yeah. They're all in on every play. And it feels like Kyle Shanahan should be able to carve them up. And yet, I'm not sure they will.
I'm not sure. So for those who haven't watched, they're first in blitz rate by a large margin, 45% of the time. That's more than Brian Flores' Vikings, which is wild.
They blitz 56% of the time against Josh Allen. These men are depraved.
They're going for it. They're third in sack rate, 9%, 40% pressure rate, 6th in league. So they're throwing the house at you, right? They're making you... Terrell Davis, by the way, did consider Terrell Davis.
Yeah, but, you know...
He had the best offensive line in like history.
Yeah, when Olandis Gary comes in and gets like 1,700 after him. But he had a cool thing and he won Super Bowls. I'm just saying.
Yeah, great back.
Anyway. Ahmad Green. Sorry, if we're just going to keep naming guys, I'm going to do it. Ahmad Green was an underrated back for the Packers back in the day. Fred. Jaguars running back.
No.
Fred Taylor.
Oh, I thought about D'Angelo Hall for a second.
D'Angelo Hall. Was he a running back?
Yes. But he kind of split out wide.
Yeah.
Anyway,
Le'Veon Bell was a sick back too, but also.
Yeah. Le'Veon Bell's a good one. Le'Veon Bell's a good one.
Obviously, JW knows exactly what Jared Hayne. Should I tell the Jared Hayne story?
Yeah, complicated history for Dieter with Jared Hayne.
So Jared Hayne, Niners, true sick Niners fans know. I had first moved to San Francisco 2014, covering the Niners for KMBR, amongst other things. Latched on with the Warriors. That worked out well for me. And I showed up thinking like, oh, the Giants just won the World Series. I'll be spending all my time covering baseball. What a dream. Nope. So Jared Hayne, Australian rugby star, signs with the Niners as somewhat of a gimmick, somewhat of a, hey, let's give it a shot thing. This is kind of pre-international program. And I watch a couple preseason games, couple practices, and made the pretty standard declaration that this guy's not good at football, which made me, for a span of a couple of days, public enemy number one in the entire country of Australia.
Hell yeah.
The amount of hate mail that came in was truly jarring. Luckily, it was from Australia, so it never felt physically upsetting. Like, I never felt physically like, what are you going to do? Fly on Qantas all the way here to beat me up?
Wow, Qantas. Shout out Qantas.
Shout out Qantas. Only airline without a crash, according to
Rain Man. I was going to say, well, I think, are you remembering that from Rain Man?
I mean, it was very clearly, it was a main plot point in Rain Man. In fact, it's the reason they had to do the drive.
That's right.
Qantas, I'll fly Qantas. So sometimes I feel like Rain Man. Regardless, the Jared Hayne thing like made me like headlines in Australia, like this guy sucks was effectively like these guys think Jared Hayne sucks. This guy sucks. That was my friends had a lot of fun with that one. Meanwhile, Jared Hayne did in fact suck, consistently proved that he sucked. They cut him. I felt rather vindicated. And now Jared Hayne, I believe, is in prison. So you can look that one up. So it's, yeah, me and Jared Hayne.
Weird victory lap for you, but I'm happy for you.
It was a strange period of time. It also brought the all-time greatest piece of trash talk that anyone has ever given me, which is calling me de shitter curtain bitch. You know, you just got to tip your hat. These Australian, I have a lot of Australian friends now.
Mastery of the English language.
A lot of Australian friends now, to the point where I have so many Australian friends, they're like, are you Jared Hayne, Dieter Kurtenbach?
That's awesome. They
knew me via Jared Hayne. What a saga.
Welcome to the Bay.
By the way,
going through the tape, saw Wisnowski last week. That was a little jump scare for me.
Indeed. Get this, one good punt, three bad ones, if I remember correctly.
That sounded about right.
That's the Mitch Wisnowski experience. Okay, sorry. We're talking about the Atlanta
Falcons
defense. I'd like to think that Atlanta has watched the tape with Jeff Ulbrich and
Raheem Morris.
Very good defensive minds who are just going for broke because they know that if they don't have a good defense this year, they're all losing their jobs. I'd like to think that they're going to take away the Bang 8, as Tony Romo liked to call it.
I agree.
That's going to be a big issue for them if that's gone.
Yeah, I think what's really interesting is their linebackers are weird.
Yes, I do not care for Divine Diablo as a player.
So Divine Diablo is like a guy who I've previously hated, and I think he's offering a little bit more. He's converted from safety.
Yeah.
They're like inverse players almost, where like Ellis is like more of like a traditional gap filler downhill guy, and Diablo's like a coverage player.
Right.
And I think they sort of play off each other well. They've been used in blitzes a lot. So there's And again, it's something where it's like Talanoa Hufanga, like a type of player where, like, if you blitz with that player and they're involved in and around the box a little bit more, and you ask less of them in coverage, and they look a little bit better of a player than they actually are.
Yeah.
And I think they've been smart in the way they've used them, and they sort of know some of their limitations. I have been more impressed with Diablo than I have been in the past, mostly in coverage.
That's not saying much.
But I also got to see him moved about 15 yards down the field on another run blocking snap. So
I will say this. We talked a lot about Jalen Walker out of Georgia, the linebacker, and a lot of you and I were both big fans because he's the kind of defensive talent that you just figure out a way to get him on the field,
right,
and to make plays. There were a lot of folks, I won't name names, but there were a lot of folks who were like, what does he do? It's like anything you want him to do, sort of in the Mikel Williams role, except for, I guess, spin or use his hands to disengage. But they're putting Walker in really cool spots. And listen, I'm very happy that the Niners took Mikel. I think that that will prove to be one of the smarter decisions they've made in the last 5 years. I
think it already is.
Fair enough. I will say, very difficult for me when watching this Atlanta tape to not think about the difference between having Jalen Walker as your 4-3 over linebacker and Luke Gifford as your 4-3 over linebacker, because they'll go five-man front on a, you know, definitively right, four-man front with Jalen Walker as a wide 11, 9, and 11, whatever you want to call it.
But would that work if you don't have Mikel Williams setting the edge?
No, I mean, it is a mutual exclusive possibility here.
But if you could have both of them, good player, it would be awesome.
Well, if only the University of Georgia knew that at the time. He is a special talent that you have to reckon with in the game plan.
What did you think of James Pierce? I didn't see much of him. I saw him got stonewalled once, and
I think all their defensive ends Leonard Floyd still there. I think all of their defensive ends are just go for broke.
Yeah.
Sinewy, speed nice rushers. And I think that against another offensive line, they would be susceptible, but they're not going
to. I think it's
a
good game for Trent. I think Pierce will try and use power, and maybe that'll get him once, but I don't think
that's a great call, because Trent's been very susceptible to power for the first time in his entire life, probably.
It is funny, though, Trent's game last week, it's like two or three like horrible snaps and then everything else good. That was like truly how it broke down.
But we talked about that. Like when you have two or three terrible snaps and you're left on an island, those are disaster snaps for the entire offense.
Right. I think that their front, Aroraro, is not quite there yet, but he does have some moments of flash.
He's getting there. I was a big Luke Aroraro guy.
Onyemata is a big plugger in the middle.
Good player. I like their interior. I like the spine with Bates. And, you know, they move Walker to middle every now and again. Yeah. And then those tackles, they rotate some guys at tackles. Like,
Zach
Harrison's
an underrated effort guy. They've done a good job on, like, the Niners of having, like, solid depth, right? Yeah. Of just, like, not necessarily having the high bar, but having good depth. I think corner is interesting because, like, obviously you've got A.J. Terrell, who's just very solid. I don't know too much about Mike Hughes. I know Billy Bowman was a kid out of Oklahoma, the like little safety that they were playing at nickel, which I like, but he's hurt, right. I believe. They've been playing.
I'm not the biggest Mike Hughes. We're talking Mike Hughes, UCF, yeah, former Hughes. Viking.
Yep.
Yeah.
That sounds right.
Hansy.
Yeah. It'll be, you know, I think Jesse Bates is helping Xavier Watts quite a bit, because when you have a safety that's that experienced, that much of a vet that can communicate things. And I think Watts is a sharp guy, and that's like part of what makes him potentially a good player. I was kind of iffy on him. There's a lot of hit and miss with him at Notre Dame where you wanted to like it a little bit more. And then the measurables weren't quite there for a guy that, I don't know. I have mixed feelings on him. But it's an interesting group where I think because of the coordination, because you have sharp defensive minds and you have sort of a quarterback of the secondary at the back of the secondary, I think that helps clean a lot of things up.
Yeah, I think that they are sound and they understand that they are going to give up some big chunk plays, but they're going to give you some big negative plays in reverse. I think they're chaos agents, and they're not as dynamic, or I guess they're not as in your face as like a Minnesota or even a Seattle.
Know, this would be a good game for some RPOs.
Yes, it would.
Because you get them to blitz.
For the San Francisco 49ers, probably not, but yeah.
I'm saying like you sucker them in, like you get a lot of pressure coming downfield and then throw
totally. I think if there was a competent offense here, that Kyle Shanahan would have a field day with that dig route. I think under average circumstances, this would be a total shootout game, right? Just injuries you can't take away, but like the guys who are out there, if they were playing at capacity, okay, this would be a shootout, you know, 42-40, you know, it'd be a hell of a game. That's what I predicted in the preseason, where I'm like, this is going to just be a total shootout. Because it would just be dig routes, drag routes, just everything over the middle, and then bombs away. This would be a huge opportunity for Ricky Pearsall, except I don't think Ricky Pearsall's playing anytime soon.
I think it's going to be at least this week, probably another week. I think he's out another 2 weeks.
I was talking to the great Grant Cohn yesterday at Niners availability. Yes?
I just want to say... There's a lot of like vague criticism of the Niners training staff because of the amount of injuries, which is fair. It's not a good track record. I always am hesitant because we don't know what goes on behind the scenes, what actually happens. I will say the fact that they let Pearsall warm up and continue to warm up for so long after a knee injury when it was clear he probably shouldn't come back in the game, then did, then sort of pulled up and pulled himself out of the game. I found that questionable from a process standpoint of saying in between every break, he was warming up and running 20, 30. I'm like, make a call. He's either allowed to go back in the game for one series or you pull the plug on him right now. Don't let him keep ramping himself up like he's in the bullpen.
Right.
Getting warm. Like, I did not like that. He kept going on the bike. And I know that, you know, that's not necessarily the worst thing. But that was like a little bit questionable to me of like, why are you letting him continue to go after this knee injury? Like, make a call.
I don't remember who said it in the last show, but at some point, you know, they're wanting Dieter to expand on some of the nuggets that I drop. I don't think it's a coincidence that they never hire from outside the house when it comes to the training staff. Have fun with that one, everybody. So Pearsall would be a big one in this game. I don't think Pearsall is going to go because here's just where I stand. I'm not a doctor. I have no idea what it's like, but I can tell you this. I've covered the NBA for a long time. I know a drained knee from 50 yards away. I know exactly what that looks like when you're talking about incision, bandage, all that. My guess from not firsthand experience, but an ample amount of secondhand experience is that Pearsall had that knee drained based on the bandage that he had on his knee is exactly where you would insert a needle to drain it. And it was a small bandage. I would imagine that he has a sprain. Is there an official determination on what that knee injury is?
No, I think it was, I thought it was a sprain. I thought they
PCL?
Said. I don't want to be wrong, but I think they said PCL.
Yeah. I think it's a PCL too. That's where my mind was. Right. I think it's a sprained PCL.
I think he's back November 9th against the Rams.
Well, who knows where we'll be all by then. But we should note that it was injured by slamming into the ground, right? On a bad late throw by Brock.
Yeah, sort of re-injured.
Re-injured. And let's not forget, and this shouts to Grant Cohn. We were talking about this yesterday. That's what ended Christian McCaffrey's season last year. It wasn't the bilateral Achilles tendonitis. He landed on that hard concrete surface in Buffalo right on that PCL. Now, to be fair, at that point, Christian McCaffrey has a PCL injury. The season's over, and you just say, God damn it, go away. Like, just get healthy because, like, we can't do this anymore. But I don't think it's a short-term thing. And they're playing it week by week, and I think that probably an IR stint would have been warranted, but it's probably too late.
Agreed. Here's how I think it would play out. Not coming back this week. Next week against the Texans, going to be a very physical game, and you're not bringing him back against the Giants on that turf. I think Definitely not. So that leaves November 9th against the Rams. I think it's either against the Texans next week or November 9th. I think you just, anyone with any knee thing, you say Giants game is a no-go, even though they're desperately going to need that win.
Yeah, turf back-to-back, as Tony brings up in the chat, yeah. But very different. You're playing on a soft sponge surface at MetLife Stadium, a big... It's surrounded by swamps, right? And they've taken that and put it into the field.
Meadowlands is a swamp. People forget the New Jersey and the New Jersey Jets and Giants. Again, they all live in New Jersey. They all practice in New Jersey. Right. They all play in New Jersey. Right. Nothing about those teams is based in New York.
And the Santa Clara 49ers.
That's right. That's right.
But it is swampland around. It is swampland inside on the field. Yeah. CMC had a tear. All sprains are tears. It's just a question to the extent.
It's like a strain is a tear, a sprain is a tear. But they're like, all tears. I think they usually call it a sprain when it's like a partial tear, and it's more, and a strain is like a lighter tear, is typically how it's. But again, it's all tearing muscle.
It's all tearing. So,
which is also how you build muscle.
Hey now, we're talking about atrophy. How you mentioned the RPO thing. Let me ask you this. It is the title of the video. We are now 51 minutes in.
George Kittle. I guess we should mention him.
I think George Kittle's playing. I think every sign points to George Kittle playing. And if they can run the ball because George Kittle's playing, like, what does that say, Jake? Because that might be the answer.
It might solve a lot. What's unfortunate is bringing in a tight end theoretically to block so that George Kittle doesn't have to do as much blocking. And then that backup tight end doesn't block well enough. So now you need George Kittle back to block.
Did you hear what Kyle said yesterday?
What did he say?
He said he thinks that his tight ends have been doing a good job blocking.
I did hear that. I did hear that. And it's one of the few times where I went, come on, Kyle.
Come on, Kyle.
He's and I do think Tonjes has been doing a good job for what he can do.
Standards. Yeah. Grading on a curve.
But like,
Luke Farrell's doing a good job blocking. Are you kidding me? Listen, we're not. We don't know 1/1000th of what Kyle Shanahan knows about football.
And we never will.
And we never will. But we can see that Luke Farrell's not having a good time.
Yeah, I took that as a, I don't want to talk about it and blow it up more than it has to
well,
be. But
that,
God,
it really,
sure,
it,
it's fine.
I restrained myself. I wanted to get in questions about Bourne. And by the way, talk to Bourne about his blocking. And he's like, oh, yeah, it's not been good. It's like, well, you know, I got to appreciate the honesty there, buddy. He's like,
yeah, good. I mean, listen, he's a straightforward dude. Good attitude. You know, I don't think he really hides behind anything.
It was actually somewhat hilarious in that I'm like, hey, did you ever have to block this much in New England? And he goes like, I know where you're going with this. And I'm like, oh, so let's go there. And it's like, yeah, these guys keep wanting to talk about 142, but all I see are the bad blocks. And I'm like, so do I. It's unbelievable. But there's that. We'll leave that aside. The Farrell thing is untenable. I don't think... do you think we see Farrell? Do you think they even bother?
Maybe to like let him be with Kittle and it'll be easier. Right? Maybe. And it's... I don't know. I think we still do.
Okay. I'll also throw this out, and this is kind of going back to Atlanta's offense, but like they're using Charlie Warner as their fullback.
Yeah.
So
it's fun. Know. It's fun. I mean,
it's,
like,
it's okay. They play a lot of 12 personnel, but it's really 21 personnel. They're getting 5.1 yards per carry on 12 masquerading as 21. It's something. This is the Tonjes role. I want three tight ends on the field. If you have to play Farrell, I want three tight ends. Replace Juice with Tonjes.
I'm dead serious. I think they might go three tight ends at certain points in this game.
I want 13 personnel masquerading as 22.
Sorry, I'm doing some quick math here.
you want to walk us through it? You want to show your work?
Can we go 41 personnel? Is that a thing?
It's possible.
Right?
It's entirely possible. I see teams do it.
Yeah, we're... I mean, technically it'd be 32 because Juice is a fullback, but I really mean, yeah.
Oh, yeah. And honestly, I this season has kind of broken me when it comes to 21, 12, all that stuff, because so many, anyone who does play fullback is lining up a lot of tight end. And it's really positionless. So these sort of, we might have to fundamentally change how we pair those groupings to like guys attached to the line.
Or like, how do you account for like, what is it, Darnell Washington, who like converted to tackle for the Steelers?
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, what is that? How do we categorize like,
what's
that?
A jumbo? What's a jumbo set? Is that an extra offensive lineman or is it technically a tight end? He's an eligible receiver.
Which the Steelers are also doing. They're just running six offensive linemen.
Well, and Buffalo loves to do it. And honestly, this team would have,
if I think they had could a benefit backup, from it.
If they had
Burford
a backup,
could do it.
Burford could do it. He would be the only one where you just say, yeah, I think jumbo sets on like a second and short. Like that would be a good.
I would like to see three tight ends jumbo from this offense. Run it to the left where you have. You have Kittle pulling. Come on.
I'm with you. Burford isn't healthy, Tony, but that is why I think there's a variety of reasons why they don't do it. The only time they've ever done jumbo was Trent in Green Bay in the playoffs.
And he almost caught a touchdown. And when he went in motion and almost actually committed murder on a field.
Almost killed him. One of my favorite plays of all time.
I think if Trent was younger, they would have kept that around.
Are you seeing what Caden Proctor's doing at Alabama, by the way? Where they're just they're like first round left tackle, they're just lining him up as
wearing a tank top and like catching direct snaps.
It's unbelievable. He hurdled a dude on Mizzou on Saturday. He almost got in. Luckily they had a 320-pound man to tackle him. Otherwise,
I think
Jesus
the Niners
Christ.
Should draft Caden Proctor. If they can.
I think they will draft Caden Proctor. I think that this draft sets up perfectly for them to get Caden Proctor.
I do think there's like a high bar for them to draft a tackle, but I actually do think they've been sniffing around more than they're just extremely picky.
Well, if you wanted the Trent Williams replacement, you start with just absurd size and athleticism, and that's a good place to go right there.
To be fair, if you're like, all right, we want a tackle, this is what our tackle is, you go, well, what do you mean I'm supposed to find another tackle? Right. I can't find another one that can do that.
Caden Proctor's never going to be Trent Williams in pass pro or the run game, but if the reason
but fullback,
but a fullback, yeah.
Oh God, somewhere Larry just got fired up.
Listen, I want to fire people up about the possibility of Caden Proctor. I want to listen, the 49ers might force our hand, but like, I want to stay in the prospect game. I like the prospect game. That's what we're good at, Jake. We like this stuff. Speaking of which, Nick Martin might play on Sunday.
Yeah, it's funny that Kyle didn't say he's definitely playing. He's like, yeah, it's a good opportunity for Nick in practice to show. I was like, are you going to bump up Jalen Graham for the practice squad instead of him because of special teams?
They might keep Curtis Robinson as...
No, Curtis Robinson's going to be up. It's a question of whether it's Jalen Graham, too.
Oh, boy. It'd be totally Jover. I think it's going to be Martin. It's got to be Martin.
I'd hope.
How about some Jordan James this week? Or is he just not a person?
Yeah.
Jordan Watkins.
You
got to
continue the bit. This is the week.
Jordan Watkins, apparently, with Sky Moore being injured.
See Jordan Watkins play football.
Best thing out of Wednesday was... can't remember. I think it was Noah who asked, what did you make of Sky Moore catching the ball?
It was
Lombardi.
It was Lombardi.
I was sitting right next to him. Like, I apologize.
He's like,
David.
Is that a yes or a no?
And he goes, it's a big no. It's a big no.
Yeah, it's a big no.
When
Jim Nance
is calling you out on a broadcast, it is absolutely a big no. I don't think we see Sky Moore again. I don't know if that injury is real or not. They might have latued him. But if Jordan Watkins is healthy, he's going to be the guy. Also, Garendo off kickoff duty. They just said we're going to try Brian Robinson there, which is like
his explanation was like it wasn't that terrible, but it wasn't good either.
No, didn't do enough. Didn't disqualify himself. Didn't qualify himself. Which is the Isaac Garendo experience, I suppose.
To answer the question, can George Kittle fix the 49ers' offensive woes? Maybe.
Who's to say?
Maybe.
Maybe
it's not a definite yes, but it certainly will help.
There is absolutely a universe where we come on Sunday after the game and are like, oh, it was just George Kittle all along.
Yeah. No,
that's awesome.
It really might be.
It really might be. Also, might not be. In which case, strap in. because this is going to be a blast.
Any other questions we want to get to before we get out of here?
Get to some questions. I need a score prediction from you, Jake.
Oh, God. I kind of in my heart wanted to predict that they would lose last week, but I felt like we should mix it up so that way people didn't get angry at both of us.
I don't want you to think about any of that. I want you, watched the tape and understanding these teams, to give me the goddamn score.
I think the Niners do lose because they can't contain Bijan. But I do think it doesn't get out of hand because Panix throws a pick.
Yep.
I'm going to say 28-25 Falcons.
Oh, wow. Okay, I have 28-17 Falcons. This is where the chat goes crazy with excitement, even though I definitely picked the right winner last week. Whatever.
Yeah, you did, but no one will give you credit for that.
That's fine. I don't want the credit. I don't care about the credit. I just want you to click and subscribe and like the channel and tell your friends. That's all I want. I don't need the credit. I just need your clicks. Yeah. We do clickbait journalism, you know?
But it could easily, like, there's a world where this gets out of hand and is cooked.
Yeah, there's a 40-12 world. Yeah.
No question.
There's not really a Niners win by more than two world.
Yeah, I think that's turnovers. I think that's, like, keeping Atlanta off the field, but it has to be, like, a sort of stinky, gritty win.
I'm very worried for Mac Jones on like a physical level. Like
when he ran last week and his knee gave out and he's like,
I
felt that. I felt that through the screen.
Yeah. I had a lot of back issues about 7-8 years ago. And it's like, you feel it. You feel it in the lumbar when he's doing this stuff. It's he's kind of got like neck roll offensive lineman energy right now. He's got a little Holland Pierce to him. Who's the cross for or who's the left tackle for Seattle who's got the neck roll 72?
Oh yeah, I forget. I think it is Cross. Yeah,
Cross, just an all-time stiff all-star, just out there just like ah.
Oh no, you're thinking of Abraham Lucas.
Thank you. Yeah, that's yes,
all cartilage. All just, cartilage.
Just every play ends with a rip of something.
He looks like he's in so much pain every single play. I love an offensive lineman who looks like they are literally tearing new ligaments as they back up.
That's Mac Jones playing quarterback right now. It's aesthetically very pleasing. Okay, we got two questions today.
We got a few more.
Well, okay, if you got them, throw them in there. We'll go with Alberto. How the hell did Atlanta lose 30-0 to the Packers? It's the crowbar theory. Sometimes this Atlanta offense is susceptible to just absolutely imploding because they can't do basic stuff and a team totally sells out and is able to stop Bijan. And then Penix just throws it into dumb tight windows and it spirals because you have an overly aggressive quarterback and an overly simplistic run game. And even just some weeks, it's just going to look like absolute dog shit. And on the flip side, some weeks it's going to look like the greatest offense anyone's ever seen.
It's making me want to switch my pick to the Niners.
I just don't think they have the dudes on defense to make.
I know. I guess
does Carolina though? Who's to say?
Yeah. Not really. Bijan's just too much of a, but it is like, again, they keep playing a lot of teams. And again, this is because a lot of teams in the league are very hit or miss, but like the Buccaneers are chaos agents. This team is question from Stefan. What do you think it takes to bench Brendel? I don't know that they feel like Hennessy's an upgrade ever.
Nope.
So they won't do that. And then what are you going to bring up, a practice squad guy, Nugent?
Nope.
No, they clearly didn't even like Zakel enough. So
it's called an injury. It's the only thing that's getting Brendel out of there.
Yeah, I think that's it. I think that's quite literally it. If you're talking about, if you're talking about benching, it's an injury. And so that's actually not a benching at all.
I mean, listen, they can make the injury a little bit more elaborate than it is and just say, you take the rest of the day off, you know, but it's an injury, which is not hard to find on the offensive line. Speaking of which, Vice, I wonder how many of our O-line issues are due to injury and how much is due to simply poor play.
Yes, to both.
Yes, to both. You can't take out injuries. But a lot of the issues that they are presenting on a weekly basis is because they are lesser versions than themselves. And you're taking 25, 30, 40% off the top of whatever that top is. So with Trent Williams, that's still very good. With McGlinchey's the only one who's seemingly healthy, though he has been on the report.
McKivitz.
Sorry, McKivitz.
Awesome.
Yeah, thank you. McGlinchey is injured for what it's worth.
Yeah, I did watch him get hurt last week.
But then, you know, when Pooney, like, Pooney's a very good offensive lineman. I'm not saying he's like an all pro or anything, but like, he had fringe Pro Bowl potential coming in.
He's like a should be a B plus right guard for his whole career.
Totally. And somebody that I think the Niners were really relying on schematically coming into this season, and he's just a shell of himself. So does that make him a bad player? Well, yeah, the tape doesn't lie, but like, is that really Dominic Pooney? Not really.
Right.
And then Connor Colby, it's like, hey, what if we took all of the volatility of a seventh round rookie who got thrown in and made it so that he just can't use one of his legs right?
Right.
It's probably not a good plan. And then Brendel, kind of the same thing.
And then Brendel's just watching a guy go by.
Which one of these two guys should I block? I guess I'll do neither.
And again, on the if you look at my grades on the whole of things, Brendel's just been whatever. He's been mostly fine with a few disasters. I need to come up with a disaster index because I'll show you which plays are very bad, but I need to like really hammer home which ones are like proper disasters.
Yeah.
Maybe right. I'll think about that next.
Do we have any sleeper picks? By the way, tonight the Bengals are going to play the Steelers in the first Thursday night football game that I will not listen to, watch, or even check the score of at any point.
There's certain teams that I will sort of refuse to watch. The Eagles are on that list. I hate.
Can't watch them.
I mean, I watch them, but I hate watching them. And so I sort of, at this point, I've watched a bunch of them and I am not watching them anymore because it's always on Fox. It's always the slowest, most disjointed game you've ever seen.
Let's keep an Jalen eye on Hurts, that, JB.
All of Jalen Hurts' teammates hate him, and he's just going around, and they're like, it's not really clicking, but they're up by 27. Oh, now it's a one-score game. And you're like, I want this to end, and I want my life to end for watching it. That's how I feel about watching the Eagles. The Steelers, I just sort of refuse to acknowledge the good things that are happening over there. I don't want to be a part of it.
It's hilarious when we talk about the good things. Like, Aaron Rodgers is dinking and dunking his way back into relevancy. The completion percentage is off the charts. I mean, it's just, they're such a paper tiger. It's hilarious. And I cannot wait for the reckoning. And Jake knows exactly what I'm talking about. The prediction and the prophecy will be told. You don't have to tell them right now.
Yeah.
But the prophecy is coming.
Yes. Tony, yes, I remember our chats about you mentioning John Madden and offensive linemen are destiny. I do remember. They are important.
No one's arguing offensive linemen aren't. You think that fat 6'8" Dieter Kurtenbach doesn't think that offensive linemen are important? I value offensive linemen more than all of you combined. It's okay. Just to say that they have made a choice. Now, is that choice correct as it stands now? Absolutely not. It worked out pretty goddamn well for them up until this point.
One more thing before we get out of here. Question for you, and I'll give you my answer. Who's your favorite slop team that you like to watch? Like, there's some good teams. Like, the Eagles are a good team and the Steelers are, like, good teams, right, that I hate watching. Who's a slop team that you enjoy? The Cleveland Browns for me. I enjoy watching Cleveland Browns football because there's always chaos. There's, like, an occasional, like, Quinshon Judkins breakout. You're like, is Harold Fannin going for 170 yards today? Yeah. Is my like, what's going? This defense is awesome. This team sucks, but it's like an awesome mess. I like watching the Browns.
It's the Vikings for me. The Vikings are not a good football team.
But they're compelling.
I have found myself. And perhaps it's just because they've been on a couple island games, but I have found myself gravitating towards the Vikings this year as just an impartial observer.
Right.
Get the Paul Allen going on Sirius XM. That's why
Paul Allen's just like upset about something. And it's
I've
like
done
the
a
180 greatest
on Paul Allen, by the way. I used to think that it was the most unprofessional nonsense ever.
I think
it
is.
And it still is. It still is. But
he's
I kind of
like,
that is unbelievable. How can you make that? I can see that. and they keep referring to the team as we.
Yeah. But
I listen to a lot of the radio broadcast, right? Most of the time on a Sunday, I'm driving down to Santa Clara. That's about 90 minutes these days from Alameda. And on a Sunday, just stay home. Get off the road. 880 doesn't need to be this crowded. And so I'll have Sirius on. And I usually listen to the Blitz, which is kind of their like audio red zone. Big fan of Sirius. But every now and again, I'll just pop on like a game I want to listen to, or, you know, like last week or Monday night, I'm listening to the Atlanta feed to try to get a tidbit here or there for the game. But I end up listening to a lot of Paul Allen, a lot of Vikings. I think they're my slop team this year.
Real quick.
Yeah.
Rishi.
Wow.
Yeah. Good. Would be a good bet. Who would have thunk the Indianapolis Colts? Who would have bet them? Who would have bet on them?
I'm in a fantasy basketball league with a bunch of Colts employees, and I didn't pick the Colts.
I doubted them. I was so high on the Colts going into the season. I saw the vision.
You saw the vision. You saw the Steichen.
I didn't. I said I explicitly don't like Daniel Jones, but there's something compelling. And I was compelled.
Well, at least you didn't pick the Titans, my friend.
Sheesh. I did pick the Raiders.
Our nightmare is over in Nashville.
Oh,
I don't want to shit on anybody in the Nashville media market, but I think we could dominate there. I think we could be the big Titans guys.
Oh, for sure.
I think we could be like the go-to Titans guys.
Yeah, they'd probably hire us on their staff.
I mean, listen, at this point, the Browns think they know what they're doing, but like at least the Titans are like, oh, fuck it, we're lost.
Yeah.
We're lost. Bring in Dieter and Jake.
Yeah. Let's do it. Let's do it.
Let's make some content. Yeah.
Let's do it. All right, okay. Folks. Don't forget, go subscribe to the Hutch Report. Got my weekly grades updated. All good stuff.
They were some doozies this week. That was a fun email to read on the John, where I'm just like, this is not going well.
Yeah. And in case you're wondering about Kendrick Bourne and the tape takeaways, I cataloged some of his blocking. So there you go.
All right, folks. Quite something. Tell a friend that you like the show. Bye.
Yeah. Bye.